Matt Medved here with Billboard Dance. We have the pleasure of welcoming a very special guest here today. We have iconic French duo, Justice. Welcome, guys.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
It's good to have you guys here. I know you guys just came in from playing Life is Beautiful Festival in Las Vegas.
Yep.
How was that?
It was fun. It was fun. We don't get to go to Las Vegas very often. So I think we do it once per tour. So it was the one time of this tour, and it was great. Like the, I don't know if it's a new festival or not, but it, like the venue looks great. It's in the city. The lineup was really good, and our slot was great. So.
Now you guys have been touring all over the world in support of your third studio album, Woman, which came out in 2016, topped the U.S. dance charts, your Billboard. And you guys have also a new album out that you just put out last month, Woman Worldwide, which was basically, it was informed by the process of adapting all, you know, your new songs and some of your previous discography for that live tour. And I'd love to hear you guys explain sort of what the process was behind putting that together and how you made the decision to do that in studio.
Well, basically it's, the way we see it was more like a Justice Greatest Hit. Well, it's kind of a fun word, but with new versions of the tracks. And when we play live,
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Basically, what we do is, we play our, not biggest tracks, but like tracks that people can like enjoy immediately. You know, we don't play like the tracks that are too, we don't play the weirdest tracks, let's say. And also the songs, we have to adapt them a lot between the album versions and the live form, because we make albums in a way in a very selfish way. Like we make the music for ourselves without really thinking about whether the tracks are gonna be danceable or are gonna be friendly in any way. But the live show is like the complete opposite. And the music we make when we play live is really for the audience first and foremost. So it needs us to readapt a lot of things, to make things simpler, more forward, more dance orientated too, because finally our studio albums are not really dance music. And yes, we played like for a bit less than 1 year. When we started thinking that the music was cool and that we wanted to share it with people in a quality that is better than what you can find on YouTube. So we recorded a lot of different live shows because that's the only place finally where this music existed before we recorded it. It only exists when we play, so we had to play it a lot of times. And then we went to Paris, listened to everything, and took the best take for every track, and then re-edit everything together, and also mixed it in a way like the sound it has when we play live is very different, because it's gonna be played like very loud, and also the mixes are made like on the go by our sound engineer, so everything has to be like simple, and sometimes we. I mean, when our engineer mixes, he can't really get too much into details. You know, he has to get something quickly that works and to take decisions regarding like the crowd or the PA or all those kind of things that are not a concern anymore when we print it on a record. So then we could focus more on the texture of sounds and really push it to the vision we have of it and that we can't make every night. Because of course, also every night when we play, we make mistakes. We never played a show that was like perfect from beginning to the end. It doesn't exist. So it was also for us to kind of finish this and share it with people. Yeah.
Sure. How long did that process take once you went into the studio?
Well, it's a long process because it started with preparing the live show. So this is when we started like to actually put the tracks all together, make the new versions, rehearse them, and everything. So that's 8 months. Then there was like maybe 1 year of tour. And then there was like 4 months of work in the studio. So that's that's 2 years almost.
Mm-hmm. Now, describe for us a little bit about the process of actually putting those songs together, figuring out which ones work with each other. Were you sort of, I know you've described in previous interviews, it's almost like being a scientist and putting things together like based on key and such. How long did that take, that part of it? And then what was that like?
Yeah, but actually in another interview we did for Billboard, we talked to the journalist about that. Yeah, like the beginning is very, like it's almost stupid, like we just make a list of all the tracks we've made. Then we listen to them and write down the keys, like the key for every track, the key signature, the tempos, and also we make a classification by some sort of efficiency. Mm-hmm. You know, like the songs we know are gonna work with everybody. The songs that we know are gonna work not because people know them, but because they have an energy that is kind of like peak time. Mm-hmm. The songs that we need just to relieve a bit the attention between like those peaks and everything. The songs that we don't want to play, but that we want to keep just one element because we think only one element is enough and we don't need to play the whole track. And when we make those classifications, then we start just like taking like, we just keep the minimum that we need on those tracks, and we just put them on loop and start to play together, see what we can do and how we can improve them. And then we start blending them, and sometimes it works on the paper, you know? So because you have, I don't know, like two songs in F sharp, you think it's gonna work, but it's not the case. So we make a lot of tries, and then we rehearse, and then we play in front of people. And this is when we notice that things we thought would be great are not that great, so we just like work again. So the process is very, very long. And what's fun is that now we're still playing, and the way we play the songs now is different already from what has been printed on Woman Worldwide. So it's a never-ending process, actually. If we were like to tour for 10 years, I'm sure it would be different.
Let's also talk a little bit about the live show, the new live show, the setup, what you guys are doing on stage there. I know music, you know, technology has evolved considerably since you guys first toured the United States. So, you know, what sort of gear do you have up there? And was there anything that you put to work for like the first time? And just curious to hear more.
Well, the main part of our rig, I think like a lot of people, is Ableton Live. But the things that we went from using, I don't know, like maybe 12% of the software resources 5 years ago, mm-hmm. to like now 150% of it. But that's because we work with a team of guys that really helped us hacking the software. Like they had to modify it. And it's great because it's kind of an open software. So we just like addressed like all of our needs. And they helped us finding solutions, like to I don't know how to say, yeah, to hack it, like to change it. And then for the to control Ableton Live, we've been trying like so many different like controllers, like launch pads and everything. And finally, we decided to build our own because like they have too many controls. And I guess they are great for the people who really like make beats on the go and like things like this. But for us, what we need is to be able to navigate easily in the session, to launch the scene, to change the tempos and all these kind of things. So we don't need like something that big, you know, we need something small, very solid, and with just the controls that we need. And for the rest of the controls, same thing, we tried so many different controllers. And finally, what we've been doing for 10 years almost is that we take Pioneer DJM mixers, mm-hmm. but we use them as MIDI controllers, so there's no sound going into them. And what is good is that they are really built like tanks, mm-hmm. so it's really hard to break them. And you can reassign every button and every fader for MIDI controls on the session. And what's good also is that from a song to another, every control can change. So one thing that you use on one song to make a special effect, for example, the song after is going to be a different effect. So with a minimum of controls, you can do like pretty much everything. And we haven't found anything better yet. You know, like every time we try, we break like dozens of controllers, and then we go back to this. And for the synths, we have two TB-303s, two Junos Alpha, two Moog Voyager, two Moog Sub Fatty, two Doppler MIDI keyboards. And all the Moog, we use them both analog and both MIDI to control synths that are softwares in our computer. So it depends on the track. For every new scene, there's control changes that are sent to the keyboard. So we don't have like to look after anything, and the sounds change on their own. And yeah, that's pretty much what we have. Have we got?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, dating back to, you know, your earliest tours, I know the visual element to your tours has always been very important. You know, I remember seeing you guys at Coachella years back with the cross, and you know, I think also the visual elements and the lights and the production on Women Worldwide tour were also very impressive. And I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you guys conceived of that, what the creative concept was behind it, and you know, how that sort of, if it evolved at all while you guys were doing it.
Yeah, the main thing, because we started thinking about it like years before we started touring, there's one direction that we have since the beginning, that is not to use videos or images, but to use any equipment as a source of light. And the like video screens have this thing, is that they're very flexible in terms of the way you can turn them on and turn them off, and the patterns you can do. So one thing is to keep like the, it's a bit paradoxical, but to keep the visual side like minimal. And the other thing is that we wanted to find a way to have a production design that is not framed. I don't know. Like sometimes we would play like in huge festivals before, and whatever the size of what you have behind you, if it's a square or a rectangle, finally your setup does look like something very small on a big stage.
It's like boxed in a little bit.
Yeah,
right? Yeah.
Exactly. So we wanted to find a way to have a production design that doesn't have real like a physical borders, if it makes any sense. Yeah. So of course there's always like a certain, like you can't extend it like in an infinite manner, but it never looks framed because it's free and there's not a screen behind us. And we also wanted things to look like we were inspired by things like Blade Runner and these kind of things. Like very, finally more electric than electronic, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. So that futuristic, almost kind of dystopian.
Yeah, like retro futuristic, because we can't help. Like we always have like one part of our brain like looking toward the future, and the other part looking in the past.
Talk also a little bit about, you know, when you guys are, you know. When you guys are in the studio and you guys are making music for yourselves, is there any part of you that thinks about how this will translate to live, or is that a completely, it's a totally different process when you guys are then putting it, you know, deciding how this is going to look visually and all that?
No, it's not really something we think about when we're in the studio, because like, as we said before, like it's a very, like selfish pleasure. Like when we're in the studio, it just has to fit like our standards for Xavier and I. But And I guess maybe at some point we have like visual ideas like for the videos, but when we are writing a song, we never think about its live form. Yeah.
It's just that the making people dance to music mm-hmm. is ruled by some code, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not like always like this, but most of the time, you know that. If you want to make a song danceable, mm-hmm. Like the structure of it and the way you make a build up until the drop and everything is kind of like a formula. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we love to do live, but this is not something that we necessarily like to do when we make music. Mm-hmm. Because making it danceable, I mean, it's fine and it's cool if people can dance to it, but it's never the first purpose of a track.
Now, you know, in terms of when you guys are on stage and when you are performing, what's sort of like going through your heads while you're doing that? There's a lot that you guys are managing, but I, you know, you guys are still able to enjoy the show and feed off the crowd as well.
Yeah, like what goes through our head is like it's a subtle blend between, of course, trying to focus on what we're doing, but not focusing too much. Because then this is when we start like messing up and making mistakes. There's also part of our brains, and maybe it's out of anxiety, you know, mm-hmm. that is thinking about, I don't know, like where am I gonna have dinner tomorrow night, or you know, these kind of things, you know, like random thoughts.
Random sort of like yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but maybe it's just like a protection not to get too stressed, mm-hmm. because I guess it can be sometimes a bit intimidating, like to. You know, you look around and you see like a lot of people, you know, so I don't know, we should do some psychoanalysis for that, but yeah, it's for us, and it's the same for both of us, it's really important to be focused but not too much.
Yeah, one thing I think is really cool is, you know, you're seeing sort of a climate now where a lot of electronic groups are adding live you know, instrumentation, or adding like extra players and extra, you know, band members for their touring band, and that's something you guys have not done, and that you guys have kept it, you know, intentionally you two and the electronics. Talk a little bit about that decision.
Yeah, it's just that we love music played by human beings, and actually most of the music we listen to is being played by humans, you know. But in our case, and especially on stage, we want it to be very electronic. Mm-hmm. We like the precision of electronic music, the power too. And also there's something, I don't know, like we feel that there's something that would feel wrong if there was like a real drummer with us, or. For us, it's really important to stick to something a bit cold and very precise. I mean, as precise as it gets, because of course we can't make like we can't be as precise as computers. And you know, sometimes we watch electronic live shows with like musicians and everything, and for us it felt a bit weird that the main guy mm-hmm. of the band is the guy that is behind the laptop, or you don't really know what he's doing, and around him there's like guys that are like so good at playing, you know, and finally the main guy is the only one that doesn't really know how to play anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's something a bit weird, but the main thing is that we want to keep the power and the precision.
Mm. Now how about you know, in terms of when you guys you know, have been touring and going all over the world, what are some of the shows or festivals that have really stood out for the Women Worldwide Tour?
We had a lot of fun at Coachella last year. I mean, we always love to go back there. Like, it was also like, because our very first live show was there in 2007, and last year it was like 10 years after, so it was a kind of a nice way to celebrate 10 years of live music. What else?
the gig we did in like the two gigs we did in Paris, we don't play a lot in Paris because it's a source of stress for us. And it's like when it's good, it's very good. But it's also very stressful, so we try to keep as less as possible, the least possible there. But the two ones we did, one headline show in an arena in Paris, and it was fun because since we're kids, this is the arena where, like, I don't know if Michael Jackson would play in Paris, he would play there. So it's a bit like Madison Square Garden in New York. So it was fun to finally play there for us, and the show went very well. And the last festival we played in Paris also, it was our last gig in Europe, was great too. And same thing, it's a festival that we played like 10 years ago. And it was really bad for us. We had like so many technical issues and we couldn't finish the show, I think. So this time it was a bit of not a revenge because we're not bitter, but it felt good to be there and actually make it happen.
Have it match your vision for it. Yeah. Mm. Why would you say it's so stressful to play in Paris? Is it just having all of your friends and family there? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's because of course, like when we are natural on stage. When we're on stage, we're not really ourselves too. You know, there's a persona on stage that is maybe a bit more like exuberant. Does it exist this word in English? Mm-hmm. And you know you do it, and I don't know, there's your uncle or your father or friend of yours. It's a bit more difficult to get in character, and even without thinking of that, it's just that, yeah, playing in front of people you know very well is just more difficult.
You feel a bit more self-conscious.
Completely, yeah.
I remember, because I was at that Coachella show as well, and, you know, Pharrell was there, DJ Snake was there, there was video of, like, Skrillex and, like, Porter Robinson, you know, a lot of big guys, you know, there to see and support. Did any of those guys reach out to you after the show or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, we received, like, a lot of, like, congratulations messages after the show, and it was nice because it was really at the beginning of the tour, so it was still a moment where we didn't really know... I mean, we knew what we were doing, but it was like in the making a bit, and it was nice to see like all these guys that we like actually being here and liking it and supporting. Yeah.
Are you guys considering ever doing again like another sort of touring documentary like Across the Universe? Or?
No, because like something like Across the Universe is something you do once in your life. And we knew it, and this is why we decided to make it very early after our first album, because there was like so many factors at the time. The first one is that we were like 10 years younger, so we had like an energy to devote to all these kind of like evil things that we knew that would disappear, you know, after a certain time. Also, the 10 years ago, it was pretty rare to be a French band and to tour North America, and it was also a way we wanted to document that. And now it doesn't have like the same freshness because there's like a lot of bands who have made it since then and bigger, you know. So yeah, we knew that it was. In 2008 or never, that we should do that because we didn't know exactly what would happen. But one thing for sure is that you only have one chance to make something for the first time. It sounds a bit silly, but that's true. Yeah. And we knew that after the first time, it would be different.
In your experience, do you feel like the American crowds have changed in that time from the first time that you toured? Just like as more Americans have sort of gotten more into dance and electronic music? Or?
But I don't know, but for us, there's not such thing as American crowd. Mm. You know, like North America, sure, is already like 51 different countries. And even from one city to another, it changes a lot in the same state. And sometimes you play, like it happened that we were playing like two or three nights in a row in New York, and you will see something different every night.
When you have to stop but don't really want to, stop at BP. Because BP has everything you need to keep it going. Fuel to keep the adventures going. The BP Me app to keep the savings and the commutes going. Snacks and drinks to keep the crew going. And the BP Me Rewards Visa to keep the rewards going and going and going. A stop at BP isn't a stop at all. Keep it going.
So it's like it's so difficult to categorize a crowd. And yes, so we don't really know if it has changed or not. Hopefully it has changed. And when we play shows, we see mostly young people, so we guess it's like it renews itself all the time. But yeah, apart from that, I don't really know.
Sure. Let's talk a little bit quick about Chorus, the virtual reality project that you guys did. I think it was premiered at Sundance. How did that come together? What was sort of the inspiration there?
A bit more than 2 years ago, Chris Milk. Sorry for that.
Happens to the best.
Too much Snapple, how is it called? Yeah. Yeah, Chris Milk, and he did like he's like a pioneer in VR. He also did like interactive videos a lot, like for Arcade Fire, for example, the thing with Google Map and Google Earth. Sorry. And he got in touch with us via Romain Gavras because he wanted like to do something with virtual reality with us. And we were finishing Woman at the time, so we sent him Chorus. And at the beginning, we were meant like to brainstorm together and everything, but then we started like to work on the tour and went like touring, so we didn't really, we lost touch a bit. And he said, "Ah, no worries, I have an idea, we're gonna develop it on our own and we'll get back to you." And 1 year and a half later, they come back to us with the thing that they made. That looks amazing. We still haven't tried it yet, but it looks great. And for us, it's one of the good example of things that get better when we don't get involved in it. Because in a way, I think if we would have like been involved, maybe it wouldn't have been. No, it would have been the same for sure. And because our aesthetics are so different from what has been done there. And it's because they made it the way that they did that it works and that it's like very immersive, you know. And we really want to try it, but like every time it's somewhere, we're not in this place. So it looks great.
You know, we were chatting a little bit earlier before this about, you know, just some of the music you guys are listening to. What are the sort of, you know, the music that's inspiring you right now?
But there is this band called Vulfpeck that I really like because they are like super talented musicians, and I guess they're all coming from various like jazz schools. But even if they have a very classical like background and training, they are making like this kind of like very funky pop music, and they're really, really amazing to listen to and to watch. And they're really a funny bunch. And also, there's this band called King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. And their music is very, like, how to put it, like. I mean, it goes in every direction, but in a good way. Like, and they are so prolific that sometimes it's hard to keep up. Like, I don't know, they released like 5 albums last year or something. And I find it very like refreshing to have like young people that are really good at their instruments and that are not and that are not really into the system. They are like they are self managed, and they like producing everything on their own, and they are like finding ways to fund their records and everything. And yeah, I really like the spirit.
It's very like independent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any artists or styles of music that are inspiring you?
Yeah, but I like these bands too. One thing I like about these bands is one thing we perceived in general in music is that music tends to be like more and more simple, which is good in a way, and some of the minimal stuff we like and find very inspiring. But I kind of like the musicianship in their case also serves like music that is stylish, because for so many years, musicianship equaled something corny. You know, you had like, if I tell you, oh, there's this band and they are like amazing musicians and they jam together, you're gonna imagine like the worst like jazz rock thing that is a bit corny. And actually with that, they managed to make something that has a lot of style. I find it, I feel very inspired by that, and also by the way the hip hop now is like getting rid of all previous like structures in terms of songwriting, and the songs I like in rap today are completely unpredictable, and it feels like it doesn't make any sense, but still it works and it's flowing. So these kind of two extremes are very inspiring.
It's cool because you know that scene, you know, with all these young rappers coming up, is very independent, very DIY, and it's like now with SoundCloud and other platforms, they can just upload it directly however they want it, and they don't need to adhere to like the format or the arrangement that you know like a major label would mm-hmm. need previously. So I completely agree. You're seeing like some really creative and like left field song formats come out.
Yeah, and still manage to reach a mainstream audience. We think, I mean, whatever the music is, even when I don't like the music, I always love when I see something weird getting to like mainstream channels and targeting such a big amount of people. It's always cool, you know, so. Yeah.
And I know you guys have said in previous interviews that, you know, you don't tend to make too much new music on the road. You like to be in the studio and have you know all that. But have you been you know thinking about what your next you know body of work will sound like? Or?
Yeah, we talk about it like all the time, and but just because we like talking about it, even if at the end is like it's something a bit different. But yeah, generally like every time we started a new record, that's because we felt it was the moment, because we kind of had like an idea, mm-hmm. a kind of precise idea of what we wanted to do. So yes, we have like a design, but God knows if it will remain the same in 2 years or I don't know when.
Is there any way that like you'd describe that design to fans who are kind of curious and listening? Or?
No, because it wouldn't make any sense, and because we've been working together for a long time, we have this kind of, you know, like it's a bit like when you have twins and they have their language and they can understand each other, so we can talk in some like ways of or with words that we make sense of, but that probably don't make sense to most people, and the thing is that we haven't made music yet, so. We can talk about things. I mean, we'd love to talk about it, but I'm not sure if it would make sense with what we're gonna release later.
Yeah, it's sort of like something unspoken between you two, in a sense. Or
no, we speak like speak a lot about it, but you know, like I don't know when we're gonna make it. So,
Sure. Talk a little bit about, you know, just to wrap up, because I think you brought up kind of an interesting point, the idea of like, you know, the connection between you two and you know, the comparison to how like twins will have sort of this, you know, innate sort of understanding of each other. When you guys are in the studio and are working together, what is that like between you two? Like, what is your creative process together?
Well, we always work together. And all the time we just bounce back. So when we start a song, we play together just to find like something. And then we're just like bouncing back. So one of us is just gonna play something or make something, you know, like program something on the machine or computer. and the other one is just like hanging around. Our studio is in a very big room. I will have a kitchen and living room, and so you can do other things. You know, we don't have to be sitting at the studio together. And I don't know, like, for example, if he's like playing something or like making something, I will let him do it like for 1, 2, 3, 4 hours. Mm. And when you feel that it's not going anywhere any longer, then I would talk to him and then continue over it and change it. And then he will do something else. And then when he feels I'm stuck, mm-hmm. he will just come back. And this is how we make things.
It's important to have that, you know, that second set of ears when you're in the studio and putting things together to bounce ideas. And
Yeah. This is why I have a lot of admiration for people who make things on their own. Because, yeah, it's much easier when you're two.
Well, I think that wraps up the questions I had for you guys, unless there was anything else you guys wanted to talk about.
Yeah, it's a bit like self-promotional.
That's but fine.
We just released a new video for a song called Love SOS. Mm. And we like it, yeah. We think it's a good one, so go watch it.
What was the the visual concept behind it? I was watching it earlier today. How did you guys come up with that?
It was a long process, but the one part of it was to find music, like images that fits the song, and for us this song really has something uplifting but gloomy at the same time, and a bit dark and sad, and the other part was just to, I think, like most times we were trying to show something beautiful but in an unusual way, and watching this man dancing, but at the same time his face is completely disfigured, is something that on the paper maybe doesn't sound beautiful, but finally there's always a way to make it in a way that is cool to watch, and also the violence is something that is also very pleasant to watch in a weird way. You know, we really love these kind of things, and I think it comes from maybe animes we used to watch when we were kids, like Akira, for example, where you have like the most beautiful scenes are also scenes that are very scary and gloomy, and you don't really want to watch them. You know, it's these kind of things, you know, where you don't
peeking
want to,
through, yeah,
but
yeah.
You can't help watching it, and we're just fascinated by things like this. So, we worked a long time on this video, like between the moment we started like writing it. And the moment it was done, there's maybe like 1 year that happened. We're just trying to find a good way of making it and try different things.
I think you guys succeeded in that. If you guys haven't checked out the video, go do so. Love SOS. And thank you guys. Appreciate you guys coming in, and great to chat with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.